1340 96.5 KVGC. And with us in the studio today is Amador County Health Officer Dr. Rita Kerr. Dr. Kerr, good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
And welcome. We have a sad bit of news to start the morning off with.
We do. We do. And thank you for the opportunity to come in this morning, speak to you and our public about the COVID-19 situation here in Amador County, which anyone who's been following our status knows that we've had increasing numbers of cases in the past several weeks. But really, it's with a heavy heart that I'm confirming this morning two deaths related to COVID-19, or actually due to COVID-19 here in Amador County residents. One man and one woman, both in their 80s, who lived in Jackson, and each of them had underlying medical conditions that put them at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. On behalf of public health, my deepest condolences to the families, friends, and caregivers of these individuals. Mm-hmm. And additionally, we have investigations continuing as to cause and COVID cause for two other deaths currently.
Dr. Kerr, we hear in the news a lot that this person was hospitalized or they went to a rehabilitation center already with a compromised immune system or some ailment, and they pass away. And they probably would have passed away anyway within a month or two of this other, but COVID gets them. How do you go about investigating and know for fact that COVID-19 was the cause of death of someone?
That's an excellent question, Jim, and we do make that effort. We do take that step with every death that has any mm-hmm. link to COVID whatsoever. Our process is to review medical records, to review the death certificate. Mm-hmm. If the coroner is involved, we work with the coroner.
Yeah.
And when necessary, we actually interview the attending physician who was caring for the patient to establish what was the reason that the death occurred. And in these instances, respiratory failure because of COVID infection with the lungs was established mm-hmm. as the cause.
I have a friend who is in his mid-50s, late 50, I don't even know how old he is. He was in great shape, thinks he may have had COVID early on, and was just hospitalized, had to go to the VA hospital for a heart condition. And they're investigating now to see if that heart condition may not have been brought on by possible COVID. This may be, you know, they don't live in this county, so we don't have to worry about that. But this condition may have been brought on by the aftermath of COVID-19.
It is possible. And so one of the things they'll probably do in that instance is look for antibodies. And they might even actually do, rather than just screening to see if antibodies exist or not to the COVID-19, mm-hmm. in cases like that, there's a possibility of doing what's called a quantitative antibody test, where they actually look at levels of antibodies and specificity, how specific the antibodies are to the actual novel coronavirus. You may have heard that in the NBA, any players who test positive, they're actually doing a heart mm-hmm. screening
yeah.
before they allow
yeah.
them to return to play, because more and more heart inflammation and maybe even lasting effects on heart are being identified as after effects of infection with COVID.
Dr. Kerr, are we going to look back at this and see this as like folks may have looked at polio back in the day? Some folks got it, some folks didn't. It was just the luck of the draw.
I think that's a pretty good analogy, Jim. I think that because this is such a new twist on a viral infection mm-hmm. that we are just learning about. We've learned a lot in the last 6 to 8 months since this started, but we're learning more every day.
Yeah.
Some of those things have really helped. For example, we are learning scientifically as a medical community what treatments tend to help, what treatments don't help, what treatments might actually be harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And the survival rate is better now for people who get hospitalized than it was back in March or April.
Gotcha. Now, what about the health of a person? A healthy person, are they less likely to contract this than someone like, you know, me?
They're less likely to be symptomatic.
Okay.
But that, again, it's very individual. And there have been a lot of theories about what sort of things can predispose a person to more severe disease. Everything from blood type, which is an interesting theory, but it's still a theory and hasn't been proven. There are certain conditions that are more and more being recognized as higher risk for complications. One of them is body weight. The heavier a person is, the more likely they are to have a complicated course. Diabetes places someone at higher risk. High blood pressure or pre-existing cardiac disease or lung disease, especially, you know, emphysema and that sort of COPD lung disease puts a person at higher risk.
I was reading an article the other day that said this may also be related to some studies are looking at cholesterol.
Cholesterol is a marker for cardiovascular disease in general. It's part of what we call the metabolic syndrome, which often in midlife and later goes along with more body weight carried around the midsection, diabetes, cholesterol, and high blood pressure. That combination is called metabolic syndrome.
We're talking with Amador County Health Officer Dr. Rita Kerr this morning. Dr. Kerr, our lead story today was a story that the Associated Press released yesterday about CalReady. And the, you know, everything is frozen now. No one's going on the watch list. No one's coming off the watch list until, you know, authorities can get this sorted out. So exactly what are they trying to sort out?
CalReady is a computer-based tracking system for epi data. And epi means epidemiologic. And that's the system that the state has used for many years. Dr. Bob spoke about it yesterday, to track communicable diseases. It was not designed for the volume that is happening with coronavirus. And a week or 10 days ago, many health departments noticed that the volume of data coming in to our system on a daily basis here at the local level had dropped off significantly and alerted the state to that fact. This week, the state convened a late night call of all the health departments to say, we recognize there's a problem. It's, you know, at, we think it's at this point in our system, but they are doing diagnostics to try and figure out exactly what the problem is and how to fix it. And in the meantime, we're having to go back to old-fashioned ways of getting the reports. Amador County, fortunately, never really did away completely with the old-fashioned way. We do receive reports via our secure fax machine and via telephone, especially from the local hospital, because we have a very close working relationship with our local hospital. A large jurisdiction, a large county with lots of different hospitals doesn't have that ability to take that many phone calls a day when they're getting hundreds or thousands of new cases a day. So they're now relying on faxes or what they call line lists to get their new cases reported in.
So would you agree that ours may be flawed, or do you think ours may be more in track of the actual real-time cases because we're a smaller, we only do, what, 150 a day? Is that what our capacity is of testing? So we don't do as many a day that, you know, large, to do thousands of them a day?
Yes, Jim, that, thank you for asking. That is true. We have not been seeing the results on our negative tests. They are not required to notify us of every negative test. Our positive tests, they are required to notify us, and we have been receiving faxes and phone calls about those. So I'm pretty confident that we are not as underreported as some other jurisdictions may be.
Are we backed up? Are we? Is there a backlog? Or are we getting, like I say, real time? If I'm being tested today, what does it take? What was it to take 3 or 4 days before you would get the results?
It depends on which lab it goes to. The hospital lab is the most efficient lab here locally. They actually have capacity to do a few hours turnaround for a test result when it's necessary to make a clinical decision, like whether or not to admit someone to the hospital, whether they need to be on COVID precautions while they're in the hospital. So that limited capacity of very short turnaround tests are reserved for people who meet those needs, those indications and priorities. The hospital also has the ability to send to a regional lab that is pretty good about turning around within a couple days. But at the larger labs, again, Dr. Bob spoke about this yesterday, on a nationwide level, there are shortages of several components that is required for testing, including some of the plastic pipettes and some of the chemicals. So there are still backlogs in a widespread way at the standard outpatient labs.
Do we still want just the regular person, I think I'll go get tested? Do we still want them to go get tested, or do we want
to... That information is still useful to us here to know what our community baseline is. And because so many people are asymptomatic, and because we are seeing community spread, that is still a useful thing to have happen here at our testing site, for example, at St. Catherine Drexel. And that site is up today.
Dr. Kerr, if there had not been the freeze at the state level, would you be here this morning to announce we are going on the county watch list?
Actually, yes, Jim. I had a call with the state data monitoring team on Monday, which was the first day our case rate for Amador County was officially above 100 cases per 100,000 population.
Okay.
And the way this works is it's about a week-long process to be put on the monitoring list once that happens. The trend is watched in 3 days in a row above 100 per 100,000 would have put us on our first day of the monitoring list yesterday. And we were above 100 per 100,000 every day this week. I haven't logged in to look at this morning's yet, but knowing what our active case trend has been over the last 2 weeks, I would not expect it to fall below. If that had happened, we would have had Thursday, Friday, Saturday to notice our community that they needed to prepare to go on the monitoring list and make the changes, and it would have gone into effect on Sunday.
Yeah.
But at this point, because of the freeze, the state health officer's July 13th order mandating closure of those additional sectors, actually moving outdoors, and if they can't move outdoors, then close, that would have happened effective Sunday.
We had made plans already with St. Catherine. We streamed the Mass, Sunday Mass from St. Catherine Drexel. We'd already made plans to do this on Sunday, but now we've scaled back and it'll be regular Mass on Sunday. But so is there a chance we can go off of this list in the next couple of days, or are we staring down the fact that we're going to have, we will be on this list sooner than later?
It really depends on how many positive cases come in over the next few days. And also, as we're working with the state data team, one thing that's important to recognize is what they're looking at is the episode date. Mm-hmm. And that means the date that either the person developed symptoms or the test that was positive was collected. Mm. And that can be when you have a delay in getting test results 10 days ago, or even longer sometimes. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we're looking at the most current 2 weeks. And what our numbers reflect, because we have no other way to reflect it at this point, is the day we receive the result is the day it hits our tally. And that's why I mentioned before that the active case count is the closest thing, and that is still above 50. And with our threshold being 38, that indicates to me that we're going to stay above that for a while unless we start to see a downward trend, which I would love to see.
Yeah. Talking to Amador County Health Officer Dr. Rita Kerr this morning. Dr. Kerr, if someone goes in and they say, man, I haven't been feeling well for about a week now, I think I better be tested. And if they go in to get tested for COVID, and let's say they're on the downward, they're getting better, and they go get tested, will they still test positive? Because this is not an antibody test. This is just if you have it, right?
Yes.
So I may have just gotten better, today, and if I go get tested tomorrow, it won't say that I actually had COVID, right?
Right, right. Generally, the test will stay positive for at least 10 days from symptom onset.
Okay.
In some people, it stays positive even longer, and that's the reason we are generally not requiring or recommending a follow-up test to clear someone from isolation anymore.
Gotcha.
Because at this point, we have well-established science that shows that in the vast majority of people, especially those with mild illness, they will no longer be infectious for in 10 days from the time they were tested or from when their actual COVID symptoms started.
So if I get COVID right now, today, I'm going to be infectious for the length or for only 10 days? Or how long does someone stay? You know, I can give it to other people.
We consider the infectious period to be 10 days from when symptoms started or when the positive test was collected. The exception to that is if someone is severely ill and in the hospital with active COVID symptoms, they can be considered infectious for up to 20 days. And someone who has a severely compromised immune system, like they're on chemotherapy or something like that, then there would be additional studies to decide when to release them from isolation.
So then would that person test positive if they were tested for after, you know, if you've given 20 days, would they still test positive or will they show a clear test?
Well, what in general, in those special situations, an actual viral culture would need to be done to determine whether they had any virus that's still viable and can replicate itself.
Where I'm trying to go with this is that maybe we could take people who are still need to be hospitalized, but if they're not infectious, we could move them to different wings.
Exactly.
Or different hospitals, and they could recuperate.
And that is one of the infection control strategies that some of the larger hospitals that have had a great impact have had to use, which is, and we call that cohorting. And so you put groups of people together who are all positive, you put people together who were exposed but not yet positive or symptomatic, and you keep both of those groups separate from the people who don't even have an exposure.
Dr. Kerr, one of the questions that we have, and we've kind of touched on this, but is please review for the audience what is meant by positivity rate. Is it not the number of positive tests divided by the number of tests submitted? Many folks think it is the number of positive tests divided by the total population. What is the positivity rate?
The first one. It's the number of positive tests divided by the total number of tests submitted in that time period.
Okay, great. So what should someone do if they feel they've got COVID? Should they take Tylenol? Should they take an aspirin? Should they lay down? Should they continue to do what they normally do? What's the
first thing I would say is if you don't feel great, isolate. Keep yourself away from others. Even keep your distance from your family members in your own home so that if it is COVID, that you are minimizing the risk of transmitting it to any others. Wear your face covering. That's a method of source control so that if you are coughing or you're breathing out viral particles, that they're getting trapped in the mask and not floating in the air or transmitted to another person. As far as self-care goes, yes, supportive measures, rest, plenty of fluids. Non-caffeinated beverages are better because caffeine actually can be dehydrating.
Sure, absolutely.
Avoid alcohol. Eat healthy. Chicken soup is a good thing. decrease your level of activity, but I don't recommend that people with mild symptoms stay bedridden because you want to gently exercise as your body will tolerate it. A lot of people get fatigue and body aches with this. They can go outdoors, but not be around other people. Sunlight is good too. And low level walking or that sort of thing is recommended.
Dr. Kerr, do you have time to answer a few questions that folks send in to us? Is there anything else you would like to cover before we do that, please?
I would like to mention, follow up on something that Tom Dixon and Dr. Bob mentioned yesterday, and that is that Sutter, who's had a tent outside their emergency room for several months now, the tent that they had was not really well climate controlled, and with the hotter weather, they were having some discomfort amongst their staff and patients, especially wearing all the garb. So through our Mohawk program, which is the Medical Health Operations Area Coordinator, we were able to secure a mutual aid resource from Sacramento County. It's actually considered a mobile medical unit. It's a climate-controlled tent.
Sure.
And a site visit happened earlier this week to make sure that the tent that was available to share could be fit on the property over there. And it's actually being deployed to Sutter Amador from Sacramento County, scheduled to arrive next week. And there will be assistance from Sacramento County, the state, regional staff, and the hospital staff collaborating in setup of that asset. And it will be put into immediate use for emergency room triage.
So kind of like a modern-day MASH unit then.
Yes.
Come in, set it up, and away we go. So,
but it's climate-controlled, which I don't think the MASH units were.
No, they weren't. So, Dr. Kerr, I'm going to ask you this question because this is one we think, we all think of you all the time. Okay, everybody thinks of Dr. Kerr all the time. Please ask Dr. Kerr, what does she do for stress relief?
Oh, thanks for asking, and I appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate the support. I don't have a lot of time for stress relief these days, but I do enjoy spending downtime in the evenings with my husband and my son at home. Mm-hmm. We take our dog for walks. I like to read things that are not COVID related and, you know, just sort of disengage from the you know, chronic barrage of media. And I think that's healthy for everybody to take a break from that every now and then.
Do you keep
of
up?
Course, not this media because.
Exactly. Of course, please. But you keep up with like Pulled Hereford Monthly and magazines
I
like that.
I don't keep up with that one anymore. Sorry, okay. Jim.
Here's one for you. And I think you've kind of touched on this earlier, but maybe and before too, maybe. What do we know? Okay. What did we know in March or early on that has changed now with more information?
One of the key things is that patients who actually have to go on a ventilator have a very hard time coming off the ventilator. So the threshold that is used or the decision point that is used to put someone on a ventilator is much later in the course than it was back in March.
Okay.
There are alternative ways of delivering oxygen. One of is a high-flow humidified delivery system that keeps quite a few people off the ventilator mm-hmm. and acts as a better bridge for that oxygen support that's needed during that critical time when the lungs are very inflamed. And then a
gotcha.
Second one would be positioning of the patients. And it's been proven that if a patient can tolerate being in what's called prone position, which is laying face down
yeah.
instead of on the
yeah.
back, is actually beneficial from the standpoint of the lungs being able to expand
more oxygen
and recuperate better.
Another question. Can you address the negative effects of isolation and the rise of depression and suicide since this all started?
Absolutely, that is a concern, and that's a discussion my husband and I were actually just having last evening. And people definitely do feel isolated and need to be able to stay connected, sometimes in non-physical ways. I've been FaceTiming and having phone conversations with my siblings, who many of whom live back in the Midwest. We were supposed to be having several family gatherings this year for weddings, all of which have been postponed.
Yeah.
But we try to stay in touch in alternative ways.
Another question, Dr. Kerr. We should have talked about this earlier on, but what gets restricted if and when we go on the state watch list?
Okay, the state watch list. I brought the list so I would not misspeak about this. And the actual list is, and I'm pulling this straight out of the state health officer's order. So counties that currently appear on the state monitoring list and have been on the list for 3 consecutive days must close all indoor operation of the following types of businesses, events, and activities: gyms and fitness centers, places of worship, protests, offices for non-critical infrastructure sectors, mm-hmm. personal care services, including nail salons, massage parlors and tattoo parlors, hair salons and barbershops, and malls. And the places of worship and protests would also include cultural ceremonies, which would be a wedding ceremony. Wedding receptions are still not allowed and have not been since
Correct.
March, but the wedding ceremony could take place outdoors.
Now, can my hair cutter cut my hair out? My barber can cut me my hair outside?
Yes, that is one of the areas that the state has made special dispensation for hair salons and nail salons and to take place outdoors. Tattoo parlors or electrolysis or piercing, because of the breaching
yeah.
the skin and the infection risk, cannot take place outdoors, but hair and nails could.
Okay. Another question, Dr. Kerr. This just came in at when you mentioned the humidity rates. Could the death rate in California be somehow related to our low humidity?
I'm not sure I understand the question there.
I don't,
climate climate's effect on this virus and its transmission has really not been well established, although we have seen that even in hot weather and even in dry weather, there is definitely spread of this virus happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's another one. Dr. Kerr, are we still, I can't make out what the word there. Okay, what it's getting at is, okay, are we still discouraging, okay, spelled discouraging one, are we still discouraging tourism into the county? So I guess they're saying, are we still discouraging people from out of the county coming to visit Amador County?
Non-essential travel is still not supposed to be happening per the state health officer's order.
Okay.
Our partners in tourism here have been very carefully messaging individual outdoor activities as if you're going to come visit, that's what you should be focused on.
Another question. Now that more people are wearing masks, why are our numbers going up?
That is a great question. And the primary driver of our increase in the past few weeks has been the outbreaks in congregate living settings.
Mm-hmm. I know
we have not seen yet the corresponding numbers in the community, except that people who work in the congregate living settings may bring it home to their household and to their extended family who lives outside of their household if they are intermingling within the 6-foot distance for more than 15 minutes, especially without a face covering.
Ask Dr. Kerr, please, about restaurants. Are you concerned about how restaurants are being set up outside in Amador County?
The outdoor dining is actually a good thing because it's much less likely for a virus to spread outdoors than indoors, on the order of 18 to 20 times less likely for the same exposure time, and that's because of air currents and the ability to more easily distance outdoors. The food preparation aspect is still happening indoors. It's just
right.
Eating al fresco like any outdoor dining patio would be.
My wife used that same term. We're eating al fresco tonight.
And that's another way I relax at home is we've been using our deck more this summer. The milder evening temperatures have been really nice. And when the meat bees aren't around,
exactly.
it's a pleasant experience.
All right, Dr. Kerr, I'm going to ask you this one last question. I know you've got to get out of here. We've kept you here, you know, past our time. But you've answered this question before, but this has come up a number of times in our requests to ask you. So, Dr. Kerr, have you found that in a household in which one person is tested positive, were other household members able to remain COVID-free by practicing all the protocols, washing hands, sanitizing high-touch surfaces, covering face, etc., or is it inevitable that they will become infected?
We have had several examples of people who took all those measures and only one person in the household ended up positive. So absolutely, those measures work when they are practiced regularly, diligently, and faithfully. It's when people let their guard down that this virus will take an opportunity to move from one person or host to the next and then infect another person.
So, Dr. Kerr, to wrap this up again with the state watch list, what do you think by looking at the numbers? And let me just going to be a multifaceted question. Are you encouraged that Tuolumne County, there were a couple of days where they had no new cases? Calaveras seems to have about a fraction of the cases, active cases that we have. Are you encouraged by those numbers, or do you think those may be false?
I have not had time to dig into whether or not they have been directly affected by the data transmission issues or not.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons that the state has put the pause button on the county monitoring watch list, mm-hmm. because each county handles the way they process cases in a unique way. And Amador has been even manually uploading cases and confirming cases because we are working those cases as soon as we know about them to try and keep the containment strategy as best we can.
Will we continue to see numbers come in on your website? Because it seems like every night
we we work them and we enter them and confirm them, we will continue to upload them.
And the health department, you'll continue to release Tuesday and Friday
press releases
to folks.
Yes.
Okay. So, Dr. Kerr, to kind of wrap this up, So our chances of going on the list are pretty good?
At this point, the state is really relooking at the whole process, and it's impossible for me to predict exactly what direction they're going to take it next.
Gotcha.
So it's a little bit of a tough thing to predict. But what I will say is that our general increase is concerning. We need to continue to take every individual and community-wide measure we can to prevent the spread of this virus. And to that end, a partnership between the Chamber of Commerce, Emergency Operations Center, and Public Health is working toward that end. 5,000 reusable cloth masks were delivered to the chamber, and a lot of hand sanitizer for distribution to businesses, mm-hmm. and we want to see those things used.
One last question, please. Paper masks.
Uh-huh.
Can I use them for a week, a day, 2 days? Do you throw them away? What is the life of
paper masks? Is a general, it's a one-day use, and if it becomes soiled or damp during that day, it should actually be tossed out and changed.
Okay. Amador County Health Officer Dr. Rita Kerr, anything else you'd like to throw in, Dr. Kerr?
Again, thank you for the opportunity to be here, Jim, mm-hmm. to answer the questions that you gather and to give the information to our community that we all need to keep ourselves as healthy as possible.
I don't know if you knew this when you took this job, but we all look to you. We all rely on you.
I never would have foreseen being in the middle of a worldwide pandemic.
No, I don't think anybody would. All right. Dr. Kerr, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
All
Thank
right.
you.